Welcome to the last lecture of this course, which you find in Fronter. Yesterday I had several lectures, and I gave you, as an exercise, a previous examination project, which you find here under activities, examination project part 1. It consists of a second part. That was delivered in 2014. The students were expected to deliver the solution to the first part within 1.5 days. Then I released the second part, which contained the solution of the first part, so that students who missed the first part should be able to build upon the correct solution. As you can see, I have already released the second part. I recommend you to not to begin with the second part before you have done a serious attempt to solve the first part. Then I will publish the solution to this examination project from last year. Later today, this evening, I will add another examination project that we had several years ago. This will serve as an exercise for you and help you prepare for the final examination project in this course, which will start Monday, the 1st of June. Otherwise, concerning the materials on Fronter, I have been making additions and extensions to several documents as late as 5 minutes ago, meaning that if you have already downloaded the documents on the front page, you better download them again so that you have the last version. So I will start today with the topic on high reliability organization. This is a very, very modern topic that is becoming increasingly important and that has relevance not only for information security but for any kind of security, including preparing for natural disasters, for terrorist attacks, and so on and so on. And let me emphasize again that what you learn here allows you also to work in other areas, not only in information security, but also related to crisis preparedness and management, disaster management, and so on and so on. So I hope you see this possibility when you finish, if you're looking for jobs, because you really get a very wide methodology that can be used in different areas. So before I start saying what high reliability organizations are, let me start with a book that was published in 1984. Charles Sparrow, who was working at Yale University, wrote a book with the title Normal Accidents: Living with High-Risk Technology. It has a very strong influence. He makes a very strong statement that our modern world is so complex and the systems are so tightly coupled that errors due to this complexity cannot be avoided. They are going to occur. And because the systems are very coupled, the errors will propagate and influence other systems, so that our critical infrastructure, which means communication structure, transport industry, financial industry, government, social systems, you name it, all these are critical for the working of society. They are so strongly coupled that accidents or errors or attacks on one of these systems will propagate to the other systems because of a very strong tight coupling. So he insisted that we have to live with accidents. They are normal. The arguments that he made, the book is of course an extensive book, full of data and information. It's still today very worth reading. He argued that there were three basic principles, three basic insights. First of all, people, because they are humans, will make mistakes, even in the most in the safest industry, even in nuclear plants. And what happens, and experience has shown, is that big accidents very often escalate from very small mistakes in the beginning. And many failures occur more at the organizational level rather than at technology. And these three principles, they are still relevant today. As I said, the normal accident theory of Perrow has had a very, very strong influence, and it's still valid in the sense that the experience has shown that it is so, and the arguments are still very strong. But even if accidents are unavoidable, we are still able to work towards preventing that these accidents escalate too much. And that leads us to the next development that came in the beginning of the 90s, something like 8 to 10 years after Charles Perrow's book. The term high reliability organization was introduced by researchers working at the University of California in Berkeley around 1990-something, 91, 92, 93, and so on. It started with a series of papers, and it has led to many publications and books. They observed that there were some organizations, some companies, that were highly reliable despite working under very, very risky conditions and under high stress. And they argued that such organizations, which they call high reliability organizations, they had to function reliably because the risk involved were tremendous. And they studied several types of organizations that they believe belong normally to the high reliability organizations, like nuclear reactors. They have very rarely accidents. Most of them have been working, at least very rarely major accidents. Another one is nuclear aircraft carriers, aircraft operation systems, emergency medical treatment teams, and companies that are continuously processing and cannot endure errors occurring because they will simply cause havoc in the processing. A very influential book by the two researchers Carl Wake and Karen Sutcliffe, called Managing the Unexpected, that appeared in 2000, in the beginning of the year of this century, and came in the second edition in 2007. That's the one I'm referring here. They propose, based on research on high reliability organizations, that they were observing five fundamental principles. And they argue that these principles can be adopted by any enterprise, even those that are working under less risk, so that they can also become high reliability organizations. These principles are divided in two categories. One category is about anticipating risks, and therefore prevent risk, and to the extent that something happens, to mitigate the impact of these risks. And of course, you can only anticipate risks that are known. So it's about issues where you are able to conduct a risk analysis and prepare for that. But there are also unexpected things that happen. They are often called black swans. A black swan is a term coming from the antique, already in a poem by a famous Roman poet, Ovid. He argued, he made the metaphor of something non-existing like a black swan, because nobody had ever seen anything but white swans. And until the 16th century, a black swan was a metaphor for something that was impossible. But then the explorer Cook discovered Australia, and one of the things he saw in Australia were black swans. So although one had seen millions and millions of swans and all were white for Europeans and so on, still seeing millions and millions and millions of white swans didn't disprove that there could be swans of different colors, say black. So from then on, the term black swan has got a different meaning. It's no longer something that is impossible. It is something that is extremely surprising and unexpected. So high reliability organizations should be able to perform against black swans, things that are unexpected and look like highly improbable but can occur. So the last two principles of high reliability organizations is about how to build resilience so as to be able to handle the unexpected. The term resilience, maybe you have heard it before, maybe not, but I am sure you will hear that many, many times because it is becoming more and more important. Actually, you may have heard it before because I have told you that I am scientific coordinator for a European project worth 4.6 million euros, something like 40 million Norwegian crowns, targeting developing resilience management guidelines for Europe. So, but still, I will come back to resilience when I come to principles 4 and 5 of high reliability organizations. Now, let's look at the 5 principles. According to Wyke and Sutcliffe, the 5 principles that characterize organizations that are able to operate highly reliable, even in very risky environments, they are these 5. First, preoccupation with failure. I will explain all these principles later, so I list them. So first principle, preoccupation with failure. Second principle, reluctance to simplify. Third principle, sensitivity to operations. Fourth principle, commitment to resilience. And fifth principle, deference to expertise. These principles are in the book by Wyke and Sutcliffe, also the content of separate chapters where they argue for these principles based on the insights achieved by studying high reliability organizations. So I am going to give you a very brief summary of what these principles are. So the first principle about preoccupation with failure. High reliability organizations, they do not ignore even small failures. They are obsessed with identifying small failures, and they have the principle or the rule that staff in the organizations should report when they detect something that is not normal, even if it's a small failure, and that these small failures should be analyzed until they are understood why they occurred, and the analysis, the insights should be shared with the others, they should be disseminated. This requires, that's not easy to do, because that means that in addition to the normal work that you are supposed to do, you have to, which is kind of working hard, you're supposed to work smart by being alert to things that are unusual, spend your time in finding out why did that happen and analyzing it and try to understand whether this small failure could propagate, cascade to bigger failures and so on, and then how to eliminate that failure so that it doesn't happen. So even small failures are important. The way to do that relates to the things that we talked about yesterday. That's about incident reporting and handling with the sharing of the insights, implementation of better routines. And if you follow my recommendation and have read as part of the stuff of yesterday, the two articles that I have posted to Fronter, both with the first author, Finula Sven, which I mentioned, is a previous PhD student of mine, who is now working as consultant, and who is your external examiner, censor, for the projects that you are doing here. So, they relate to an analysis of incident reporting related to safety, organizational accidents, and related to information security. The other reason why high reliability organizations are very much concerned with small failures is if the staff in the organizations do not detect failures, which always are occurring, then they have lowered the guard. They are actually not alert enough. They are complacent. They are satisfied with the situation. And working in high reliability organizations, you cannot be satisfied. You must be very actively checking. You know failures will occur, so if you don't detect them, then you are kind of sleepy. That indicates a false sense of security. That indicates that you are satisfied with the status quo, that you are complacent. The second principle of high reliability organizations is reluctance to simplify. To be reluctant means to have resistance against something. So, because the world is complex, high reliability organizations expect that you deal with complexity, that you are not satisfied with simple explanations. You should create more complete pictures, more detail, more nuance of what you are dealing with, and also about your position as to how to face them. Of course, this is a question of trade-off, of balance, because going too far will lead you to too many details and complexities. So that requires a lot of experience and sense of what is relevant, what is the right degree of analysis, how far you should go into the details. So to speak, what is the right resolution for the analysis. Resolution is a term that comes from physics, and that is, you speak about resolution concerning microscope and lens and so on, and that tell you how far you can see. Of course, in a microscope, it is kind of a given. It's given by the lenses that you use that gives you the resolution. But in terms of analyzing problems, it's you who chooses the degree of resolution, whether you stay at that level, or you go into more detail, or you want to go even deeper. And in principle, you can go deepest to the all kind of details, but then it may be too detailed for understanding. So you have to find the right degree of resolution. But then high resilience organizations, they admit that the world, that is their world, whatever they are doing, if it's nuclear reactors or medical emergencies, it is very complex, it is unstable, there are a lot of surprises, it is unpredictable. So therefore, they instigate that the staff in high resilience organizations should all the time work smart towards understanding and learning more, continuous improvement. In particular, high resilience organizations, they require that you do not accept events that are occurring as, oh, I've seen that before. It's kind of familiar to me. As it occurred with Challenger, where they were seeing leakages, gas leakages, constantly on launching, and they knew that the O-rings were leaking, but since nothing happened, they assumed that was not dangerous, until one day, in one of the launches, the leakage was too big. It turned out later that was low temperature. It was in winter times, and the colder the temperature, the stiffer the O-rings were, that we are supposed to contain the leakage of the petrol of the driver of the rockets. And one day that it was cooler than normal, even cooler, then the leakage was major, and the whole thing exploded 1 minute after launching, and all the astronauts were killed. But then it turned out that the staff at NASA, they had kind of accepted these leakages as normal. They were familiar, they had occurred before, nothing happened, so that meant they could ignore them. And that's exactly the kind of attitude that the high reliability organization should not have. The high reliability organization should not say, oh, I've seen that before, nothing happened, so we can ignore that. Rather, they push us to analyze the events, see why they happen, understand why they are happening, and whether they could escalate. Mostly when you do such a close analysis, it turns out that the event is not at all familiar. It has hidden aspects, and some of them can be very dangerous. So reluctant to simplify is a very important principle of high reliability organizations. The third principle is about being sensitive to what is happening, sensitive to operations. Instead of just relying on rules of management, on principles and guidelines that have been declared up front, they want to see what is actually happening at the front line, there where the work is really done. So that means that high reliability organizations not only have the big picture of strategy, but are looking at what is happening at tactic or even operational levels from day to day. So they are much more insistent on situational awareness, on seeing what is going on, understanding what is going on, and relating that to the big picture and correcting it. So situational awareness is about being aware what the situation is, and that means being alert to all kinds of things, being observant, insistent, looking at the situation from different angles, involving different kinds of expertise, and so on. And then also the question of continuous improvement, which is the topic of this course, continuous improvement of security. That's why it is so important. So far we have spoken about anticipation, about looking at risk, observing risk, understanding risk, going to detail, and not just relying on guidelines, on strategies and so on, but combining the principles, the guidelines with what is happening in real life, being preoccupied that failures will occur, being preoccupied with understanding the failures and reporting them, analyzing and sharing it. Now we go over to the situation or with the principles dealing with how to handle those things that are black swans, completely unexpected, surprising, you cannot prepare in advance for them. So what can you do? The fourth principle is commitment to resilience. Resilience is a term that was introduced in ecology, and it was about the ability of systems in nature, natural systems, to form a complete system that was resistant to changes as long as the different units were there, and understanding why such systems would collapse if you acted as human and took something away or reduced some population, that had tremendous consequences very often because all the populations in biology will be connected in the ecological system. Then the system was understood in engineering and ultimately in security. And in security, by resilience, there are several definitions, but a very simple and wide definition, which is well accepted, is the ability of the system to preserve those services that are critical for its mission. no matter what happens, even if unexpected things occur. Another definition, which is comes from the United Nations and UNISDR, is the unit in the United Nations that is concerned with disaster response. Their definition is resilience is the ability of a system or a community or a society exposed to hazards to resist, to absorb, to accommodate to, and to recover from the effects of a hazard in a timely and efficient manner, including through the preservation and restoration of its essential basic structures and functions. So in a sense, it's about that the organization, the community or society should be healthy. Exactly as your health means, for one thing, that you can prevent and diminish some risk. So if you live healthy, then you will, for instance, care about hygiene, wash your hands often, so as to prevent that there will be bacteria and viruses that could infect you or that you could transmit to other persons. It's about eating healthily, it's about doing exercise, and so on. And if you look at this, creating health means in part preventing again things and risks that you know, like taking vaccines. You take vaccines against poliomyelitis, for instance. You give it to children so that they don't get it, or measles or other things. There are known risks. You have possibilities to prevent these infections to occur, and that's why you vaccinate. So this is anticipation. But then you have things that you cannot prevent. You can be infected by Ebola if you are in Africa at the wrong time, or if somebody coming from Africa that is infected transmits the virus to you. There is no vaccine for that, and then the persons who resist best those viruses and bacteria that we don't have resistance to, that we are not vaccinated against, they are persons who have a very good health. They are strong, and they are in strong shape. The heart is strong, the lungs are strong, the blood system is strong, the immune system is strong, and so on. And these are things that you can foster by a careful life, by doing exercise, by eating the right things, and so on and so on. So that's kind of the resilience in terms of the health. Health of the system is kind of resilience of the system. So how can a high resilience organization prepare for the unexpected? Well, they should develop capabilities to handle the unexpected. That has to do with having the right technology, to have the right organization, to have supply resources, to have even redundant resources, to form the right alliances, to train for unexpected, to train the staff to be able to improvise and to work together in abnormal situations, and so on and so on. To train the staff to operate under continuous stress. So, but that means also that they train to be able to very quickly detect if something is happening. The earlier you detect that something unexpected is happening, the easier it is to react in a timely manner. Then again, you have also to identify the assets in your system that are critical and that need most protection. And for those assets, you will create redundant systems that can take over if the primary systems are disabled. So in a world where a lot of unexpected things can happen with tremendous consequences, this aspect of preparing for the unexpected to commit resilience is extremely important. I will add an article on how to create resilience in critical infrastructure, which I think you will find interesting, you will like to read. Again, you will see it's about generic principles, so it's not only about preparing against information or cyber attacks, it's about preparing as to how to make our critical infrastructure systems resilient against all kinds of threats. And then the last principle of high resilience organizations is deference to expertise. So this means that in high resilience organizations, they understand that expertise is not concentrated in the head of one or two or three persons. And it is not necessarily the leaders, the managers, the high positions, even the engineers with most experience that know everything. Everybody is important, and all are crucial pieces for the well-functioning of the system. And sometimes the expertise that somebody has in the front line is the most important one, more important even than the senior manager or the senior engineer. So for this, they cultivate diversity and they respect the knowledge and experience that is in the head of multiple persons. Because of that, they deal better with complexities when they happen, and they don't have rigid hierarchies because they are much more vulnerable to error. If everything has to first be decided at the top management, top engineering expertise, then you become rigid and hierarchical. So high resilience organizations operate as to what is happening at the front line is decisive. And the affiliate authority to deal with the unexpected is migrated to the person who has the most relevant expertise for what is happening at the moment, regardless of their rank, even if they are just ordinary workers. If they are those who know best for the particular incident, then they are they who should take the command. An analogy from defense, from the military. The British author James Reason, he was a professor, I think, in Sheffield, and he was widely influential. He wrote many books about safety in industrial contexts, preventing accidents in industry and so on. So he was British. He observed, and that was quite a risky thing to do, that in the Second World War, the German military was much more effective than the Allies in terms of their ability to defend themselves, to attack, and to kill the enemies. So the kill ratio of the German army was much higher than the British or the American army or the French army and so on. Which of course is not a popular thing to say, since we all know that Germany in the Second World War was led by Nazis, by Hitler, which was one of the most dark episodes in modern history. But the reason why the German military was so effective has nothing to do with the Nazis. It has to do with the previous century, with the 19th century, when they developed new strategies for the military, and there are several famous names associated with that. One of the famous names is Clausewitz. There is a book by Clausewitz about the principles of war. And the key, according to Reason, was that Clausewitz and the other theorists of the German military insisted on flexibility. So even if the Allies were making jokes about the Germans, who were supposed to be very hierarchical and very rigid, the reality was the opposite. The German military was extremely flexible, and they trained the soldiers to take decisions if they were necessary. So whenever the situation demanded it, a soldier or a sub-officer or whoever should take the initiative even without orders. And they train the military like that, and that's exactly the principle that we would call here deferring to expertise. If the situation in some moment requires that somebody at the front line is the one in charge, then no matter what rank it has, this person should assume the responsibility and to handle. So these were the principles of high resilience organizations, and again, just to review, there are five principles. The first three are concerned with dealing with known risk, anticipating, preparing for them, taking measures so as to reduce the impact of these risks, to mitigate them, and they are preoccupied with failure. Look, you know the system has failures, look for them, detecting, analyzing, understand them. Reluctant to simplify. Systems are complex. You should therefore not handle them in too simple a manner, but find the right level to look at them so that you are able to understand what is happening and go as far into the detail as the situation requires, but not deeper. Then sensitivity to operation, that means all organizations need strategies, they need guidelines, they need rules, but these upfront guidelines, rules and principles, they should be constantly be re-examined in the light of what is happening in the front line, which means also that you have also to pay attention to what the staff is doing. Very often the lower rank staff, but they who are doing and dealing with the situation. So it's about involving everybody and correcting your principles, strategies and so on in view of what is happening in the front line. The last two principles concern about preparing for black swans, for things that are completely unexpected, but they are going to happen. And then resilience is about protecting your mission critical systems, being able to resist as much as possible if a blow comes, be able to absorb the blow without too much damage, being able to preserve the crucial systems that are necessary for the organization, for the company, for the society to continue operating, for those things that are vital, creating redundant systems that you can rely upon if the first are destroyed, training the staff to be able to handle unexpected situations, to resist stress, and then finally defer to those who have the right expertise to handle what is happening, no matter of their rank. So again, you find this very well exposed in a classic book by Wyke and Sutcliffe, which is Managing the Unexpected, and which I very strongly recommend you to read. Okay. So, any questions? By the way, I see that in the area of questions and answers, not much is occurring. There is no one who is active here, which is a pity, because here you can create a forum, you can create a dialogue, you can exchange information with each other, including me, and therefore you are missing the opportunity of learning from the peers and also to create more motivation and so on. So please, at least towards the second project, do that, exchange information in advance and so on. Otherwise, I have a message to you all, which I'm going to put in here. And that is, I discovered, related to this first project, that I had models, Venzi models, that differ more from each other than I had intended. Ooh, that's a lot of noise now. So by some mistake, I put in Venzi models that were different on several constants rather than just one or two variables. This doesn't have any consequence to you, but I discovered that when I reviewed your answers. Okay, I have now to stop because of this break. I will stop a little bit earlier and hope that these people stop making noise before we continue. The next lecture will begin at 1:15.